Hi, good afternoon everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Offices of Rajiv S. Khanna. Today is Thursday, December 16th, 2010. This is a community conference call that we host for our people here. The call is being recorded, so if you folks do not wish your voice to be recorded, please hang up or don't speak. The call will be available publicly, so you may want to conceal your identity if you want to have any follow-up discussion. The making of this call does not oblige us to be your lawyers, nor does it oblige you to be our clients. This is merely just an information exchange session, and we will give you the best information we can with the facts presented. That said, let me get started. The first question is from Tejal.Renu. Contract with the Desi Consultancy. Working at a client side, in between there are two layers. I have a contract with my employer, and she can break it after 2 weeks' notice, but she cannot join any client companies for 1 year. Now client D, which is the client and the client wants to hire full-time, and they can transfer the H-1 also. So she wants to know, if I break the contract, what will be the possibilities? Look, first of all, contracts are a matter of state law. I really don't know what the implications of the contract break could be, but I can give you one piece of practical advice. The end clients usually have a lot of clout. The best thing would be for your end client to negotiate with your employer for some kind of a finder's fee so they can let you go to them. That would be my advice. Okay? Next question, SWE82. H1 extension based on 365-day rule after the expiry of 6 years of H1. So my EB2 NIW I-140 is pending for 6 months. Used up 6 years of my H-1, including the recapture. I'm planning to change to H-4 status. Can I extend my expired H-1 based on pending I-140 for 365 days? Yes, you can. If my NIW I-140 is denied, can I appeal? Yes, you can. Can I apply for H-1 extension based on I-140 pending 365-day rule for the expired H-1? Yes, even if the H-1 expires and either the I-140 or the appeal combined have been pending 365 days, for example, 6 months I-140 stayed pending, then you appealed and now the appeal has been pending 6 months. So once the 365-day rule is, that way 365-day rule can be applied and you get H-1 extension. So even though you're on H-4, once you hit that 365-day mark, you can start your H-1. Actually, H-1 can be started 6 months ahead of time, but the beginning date of the H-1 would be when the 365 days are over. If my I-140 gets approved, can I file for my H-1 extension even though H-1 is expired? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. So in other words, you do not have to be on H-1 in order to get an H-1 back. So even though you're on H-4, you will apply for H-1 extension. Okay? It didn't used to be like this, but a couple of years ago, before Bill Gates, who was one of the main officers in USCIS, before he retired, he set out this interpretation of the law, which is very beneficial to all of us. Next question is Chinna 2K2, perm filing issue. This particular question involves a fact pattern where an employer and their lawyer are trying to recover money spent on perm. Well, you know, folks, perm has to be paid for by the employer. They cannot directly or indirectly recoup the money. Then Chinna went ahead and did a follow-up on this, and he said there's a contract in which, and this is his post number, message number 14, it says that there is some language about, oh, we realize that we cannot take back firm money, but we will take back immigration costs. Well, let me tell you this. If it is not money for permanent resident process, what is the money being recovered for? I mean, if I remember correctly, you said that the lawyers were asking you to pay back $3,000 for advertising. That's nonsense. They cannot do that. That is absolutely illegal. Okay? My advice is go ahead and file a complaint with the certifying officer. That's what you need to do. Okay? Next question, Ram_LA. I have a couple of questions. I'm on 6th year of H-1B, got an RFU on I-140 about experience letter not being on company's letterhead, I guess. I had 2 previous employers. Okay. Company B is out of business. So what do I do? Well, you should get together with your lawyer. They should basically, and you can quote me, excuse the non-availability of primary evidence so that secondary evidence like affidavits from co-workers or supervisors can be used. Excuse the non-availability of primary evidence. Because the company is closed, you can't get primary evidence. Okay? Question number 2, my visa on passport has expired October 2010. My H-1B is going to expire March 2011. Do I need to apply for my H-1B extension premium processing? Company is located in New Jersey. Project is in California. What needs to be done in terms of LCA? Well, LCA requires that if your place of work changes from the LCA approved site to any place which is beyond normal commuting distance of the LCA approved site, you have to file for an H-1 amendment. Okay? So, in other words, they have to redo the LCAs and they have to basically file the H-1 amendment, which is a petition with the USCIS. It looks just like a transfer or a new case. Next question. Sabah 303, I had an interview along with my wife for green card. This is very strange. The daughter sponsored us. We were not aware that sponsor is also required. I don't know of any such law. I have never heard of this before. Okay? So if they are taking so long to adjudicate your adjustment of status case, I think you should contact your congressman's office, Sabah. Let us see what the congressman can find out for you. This is, in my view, highly abnormal. Contact your congressman. Next question, info 8, green card for spouse. She got married to first husband after he won the green card, and he won the green card lottery. Both got green cards. A little more than a year, we got divorced and I remarried. I need to bring my husband to USA. What are my options? Well, obviously one option is to apply for him as the spouse of a green card holder. I don't see why that can't be done. I'm not aware of any law that stops you from doing that. The other option, of course, is once you get your citizenship, you can apply. Third option is if he can qualify for himself. Okay. Next question is CEKIC, Canadian citizen with no criminal record. I've been a truck driver for 6 years, coming in and out of USA. 4 months ago, I was interrogated for 12 hours. Jesus. 12 hours and then denied entry to America. I tried to get assistance from legal aid, Homeland Security, Nexus Trusted Travel, which I was denied. I've been out of work since then, don't know what to do. Are you able to help in any way? I cannot do much for you, sir, but I guess you could approach the U.S. Ombudsman. They have their own website, and you can ask them to look into this matter. Because although the Ombudsman looks over only USCIS, not CBP. So I have no idea what is the best way for you to proceed. I could say you could go to a congressman's office, but since you are a Canadian citizen, you don't have a congressman in USA. Let's think about this. I guess they did not state the reasons. That's very strange. The problem is the ombudsman covers only the USCIS as far as I know. They don't cover CBP, which is Customs and Border Protection, they are the people who would stop you and interrogate you. So what should you do? I guess you could try writing to, I don't know if this sounds weird, but maybe Michelle Obama. You could also try writing to the chief man of CBP. They are at cbp.gov. You could try writing to them as well, the director of the CBP. See if this works. I really don't have a very good suggestion for you beyond that. I'm not sure what I can do for you. Of course, we could try filing a request for some more information from CBP why your entry was denied, but they are not obliged to answer us. Okay. Next question is Mandy Ratta. Two questions. Is my son protected under CSPA? Well, sir, CSPA rules are fairly complex. I will just give you a quick run of them. From your son's age, the only time that can be deducted is the time your I-140 was pending. Okay? So let's say he was 20 years old, or let's say he turned 21. But, and now the priority date is current, he's over 21, but your I-140 was pending for more than 1 year, that 1 year can be taken out of his age. And since he's now become 20 for that calculation, you can apply for his 485. But other than that, there's nothing else that helps you. So he will age out. Okay, if you are not able to fit into that criterion where the time pending for I-140 is taken out and he's still over 21 when the 485 dates become current, there isn't anything we can do about that. Am I eligible for EB2, a BSc with a 3-year computer science degree? You may be. You may be. It is definitely something you should discuss with your lawyers. It may be possible. Okay. HGB, H1B, H4, out of status, urgent. I am on H1B status, resigned job December 1st, previous H1 good till August 23rd, 2013. Another employer is willing to file. Wife is H4 dependent. She went to India for 2 months vacation. She entered United States on December 13th. What are the consequences for entering USA after my resignation? Well, it can definitely be construed to be an entry procured with a misrepresentation. Okay, you are out of status immediately. You don't have a grace period. Now, if she didn't know about all that and she basically entered in good faith, innocently, I think she'll be okay. But if you guys knew about it and decided to come in anyway, a USCIS can certainly make an issue of it. Can I file H-1B transfer within USA? You can certainly try if you have a good enough reason, such as, you know, unexpected layoff, but it's totally up to the government whether they want to forgive you or not, okay? What is my wife's status, visa status right now? Well, she's still on H-4. The only question is that H-4 valid? Can she apply for F-1 visa through a community college or H-1 by finding a job? Yes, she can, and she should reveal to the government how she entered. If she voluntarily reveals, I think she should be okay. But, you know, if you file for an H-1 transfer and the government forgives you, then, of course, your wife's entry is also not a problem, because that means government has forgiven that time period. At least that would be my take on it. Okay? So if you can explain to the government, otherwise what will happen is once you get your H-1 again, she and you should both go outside U.S. and get a stamping done. Medha 08, H1B to F2. Thank you for this. I've also previously used your... Okay. Changing from H1B to F2, as my 6 years of H1 are up, no green card process in place. Does staying on F2 count towards the 1 year gap required to restart the H? No. You have to be physically outside USA. Suresh Male, I am on EAD with our H1B, and how long maximum can I stay in India? Second, how can I bring my wife from India just with EAD? You cannot bring your wife just with EAD. She can only come to USA if you are on H1 and she comes on H4, or she qualifies for some visa by herself, such as like an H1 or an L1 visa. Okay? Otherwise, you cannot bring her here just because you have an EAD. Now, if you go to India on EAD, and remember, it's on advanced parole, not EAD. If you go to India on advanced parole, there are a couple of things that could go wrong with this scenario. Most important thing is, how do you explain that you have a permanent job when you are taking long-term time off to go live in India? If there is a good explanation for this, because your green card job is supposed to be a permanent job. If you are going to India, like let's say you are right now working for the employer at that job, and then you leave for 8 months or 10 months, who is doing that job in your absence? That becomes a practical issue. USCIS has not been raising that issue very often, but they can. So, you know, for your wife, I would say that unless she qualifies for an independent status or if you want to go back to H-1, you can do that. If you go back to H-1 status, you can get from H-4. Other than that, there is no other way for her to come here, and for you to go away for that long, you need to have an explanation. Of course, it has to be truthful about why you are away for so long, and yet there is supposed to be a permanent job. Okay. Next question, travel to USA. I'm on H-4 visa. Husband and I traveled to India, had a visa interview scheduled in Chennai. They put him in administrative processing. I'm studying in USA. My spring semester starts on 12th January. Is it okay for me to travel to U.S.? This is a very tricky question to answer. I'm not sure I really can. Because, you see, the H-1 holder is not in USA, but the H-4 holder wants to come to USA. The H-1 holder doesn't even know he is going to get his visa stamping. So, ma'am, my answer to your question is, I am not sure this is legal. Okay? If you can get an F-1 visa, that would be wonderful. That would be the best thing that you can do. I don't know if you have enough time for it between now and 12th January, but that would be the ideal way to go. If you enter on H-4, somebody can take an objection that this is not really a proper entry because the H-1 holder is not here and they are not even sure if they are going to get a visa. This is my best guess of the situation. What document should I take with me? Basically, I don't think there is anything I can recommend that would make it any safer. If I'm denied entry in USA, what should be my next steps? The problem is there are two kinds of denials. One is a formal exclusion where they tell you you cannot come back, make you sign some paperwork, then you can't re-enter USA for 5 years. The other one is a little better, and most of the times they do that. They will let you withdraw your request for entry. That means you have to take a return flight back to India. Okay? You cannot even enter USA. If I'm denied entry, will it hold against me for any future travel? I just told that. There can be a ban if they formally exclude you. Okay? Next question is, Chinna 2K2, I already answered this question, so we are good. The questions that I have before me are answered. I am going to open the call for follow-up questions first, and then once we are done with the follow-up questions, then we can start talking about any new questions that might have you might have. Press *6 to speak with me, please. *6.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Hello, this is HGB.
Yes, ma'am. I can hear you. Go ahead, please.
I'm the one with the H-1B, H-4 out of status. When I entered U.S., I didn't know.
If your entry was made innocently, I think you should be okay. Because you did not do anything purposely wrong. And this is such a weird situation that even lawyers would have to scratch their heads and kind of try to think their way through whether what you did was legal or illegal.
Yeah, when I was entering, he thought that the situation would get better. He would be able to apply for H-1, but I came with a fractured leg and a 10-month-old baby.
Oh.
So he didn't want me to know what was happening.
Oh.
But I was already stressed out.
Okay.
So anyway, I entered, and now my question is, without leaving the country, will I be able to apply for any F-1, H-1, or 2?
No, ma'am, you can try, but the question is, are you going to be successful? Your question is, can I apply? The answer is yes. Am I going to be successful? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay. Because I have this baby and a house that we are paying mortgage for. So if I my husband go back to India, and we get stuck, then we don't know what to do with the property here.
No, I understand that. But there is no practical solution that I can think of beyond what I already said, which is if he applies for an H-1 transfer and he explains his situation to the government, they might be willing to let it go.
Okay. So, is it better for me to apply for a visa and he become a dependent on me before?
I don't know the answer to that question, ma'am. I think it might be better for him to apply.
Directly?
For H-1.
Okay.
Okay, but you can apply separately yourself also if you want.
Okay.
At the same time.
So,
you know,
so
you apply for F1,
F1,
you apply...
Or a tourist is better right now for me?
F1, I think is better.
F1 is better?
Mm-hmm. If you want to go to school, F1 is the way to go.
Okay.
Good luck to
you. Just one last question. So you would recommend us to liquidate our property here before we try to go back?
I don't know the answer to that question, ma'am. Because I don't know whether you're going to have to leave or not.
Right. Yeah. You're kind of stuck too. Anyway, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
Hi Raju sir, this is Renu here, which is regarding
Renu.
First.
What
I'm
was
good,
the
thank you, how are you?
Good, good. Remind
I'm regarding first question.
Remind me what it is. I'm not on the...
It is about the contracts between the my company and
my... Oh yeah, getting
myself.
Hired by the end client. Yes, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, she is my wife. I'm talking on behalf of her.
Okay.
Actually, there is a contract between. I have pretty much explained in the question that I cannot break it and I cannot join the same client that I work through to my company. So, but the problem is, whatever if I consider my pay and all, it is very good chance for me, and
no,
it's very good for my
sir,
future.
Venu, I just told you that the best way that I know of doing it is practically. Is to have your end client talk with your employer directly and see if they can pay them something and hire you directly.
Okay,
because your end client is the one with the muscle. You are not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then again, I don't know the strength of the contract because I cannot comment about state law issues.
Oh, okay. And if I break it, what will be the maximum extent?
You're asking me questions that are in the contract. I don't know.
So it's all depend on the contract, what it is
It depends upon what is written in the contract, whether it is legal and enforceable under the state law. So it's all a question of contract law. If I were you, I would avoid getting into those situations and just talk to my end client and see if they can negotiate you out of that contract.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah,
this is Jay. Mr. Rajiv, I wanted to ask, how is H-1B quota working right now? I thought there are 13,000 visas available, but is it still like it has to be filed before April 1st and you can start?
No. Now, if you're looking at April 1st, that'll be April 1st. April 1st, next year's quota you're thinking of. Then you're thinking of 2011-2012, you know?
Okay. So right now, anyone can be filed?
No, hang on. I'll get to it. But before I do that, I don't want to cut into people who have already posted the questions. I'll get to your quota issue. I'll explain to you how quota works. Okay, just one second.
Okay.
Does anybody who has posted a question has a follow-up question?
Hello, Rajiv.
Hi, Rajiv.
This is Megha.
Megha, go ahead.
Thank you for addressing my question from H-1B to F-2.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if would it be better for me to just end my H-1B and go back and come back after 1 year? Because if I convert it to F-2, does it... It doesn't help me to restart the clock, right? I cannot start working.
The only way you can get the H-1 back is either if your green card has been going on for 1 year or you have been physically outside USA for 1 year.
Okay. So does that mean if, for example, if I convert my H-1B to F-2 after the February where mine expires and I stay on F-2, does that mean I'll never again be eligible for H-1B or how will that work?
Not as long as... No, you will never be again eligible until you leave for 1 year or you start a green card.
Or you start a green card process. Okay.
Right.
So that is the only way. So even if I convert it to F-2 and I stay out of the country for 1 year, will that 1 year clock still count towards this
As long
restart?
As you're physically outside USA for 1 year, we don't care.
Okay. It doesn't matter what visa you are on.
If you have a visa, that's fine because you're outside USA.
That's right. And so the day my H-1 expires, how much time do I officially have to leave? Is it about a week or...
It's 10 days, but be careful.
Okay.
Many times they add that 10 days on your I-94 when you enter USA. So make sure your I-94 doesn't give you approval plus 10 days already. See, sometimes, let's say somebody's H-1 is expiring on February 2nd, when they went outside and came back, USCIS often had 10 days to your I-94, so they'll issue it for February 12th, okay? But actually, your status expired on February 2nd. Just make sure you don't already have those 10 days counted in.
No, I don't, because mine ends on the 10th of February, and my date stamped on the I-94 is the 10th of February.
Yeah, then you have until 21st February, I guess.
To leave, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Next question, folks.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Ram underscore LA,
yes, sir.
Number 5.
What was the question?
Regarding my 140 RSE and H1 extension.
Right.
Based on the internal project.
Right.
So I should contact the lawyer and talk to him about the RFE, the secondary evidence. What can I submit?
Yeah,
like
basically, you see, you can't just use secondary evidence without excusing primary evidence, okay? If somebody says, look, get a letter on your employer's letterhead, unless I explain to the government there is no employer left, they're not going to let me use something else.
Right. So how can I explain them about that?
Well, you will draw up affidavits. Your lawyer can probably look up the corporate, records on the state secretary's website and talk with the secretary of the state. See if they can get some kind of documentation that shows that the employer is no longer in business. Those kind
right.
of things. And lawyers should know what to do.
Right, because my lawyer only asked me about sending the W-2s from the previous employer who is out of business. So,
yeah, but that doesn't prove the experience, you see. That's the problem.
Right.
Okay, so yeah,
so,
you can send those W-2s and all those things that are also secondary evidence, but they are not evidence excusing primary evidence. That's what you need to get together. Why can't I get the letter of corporate letterhead? That's what I need to prove.
Right. So that's what I explained to him when we submitted the 140 in the first place. And he said, get an affidavit from my colleague at that time.
Yeah, but
so that's
you
what
still
we
have
submitted.
To excuse. I mean, I don't know whether they have done this sort of thing before. Are they immigration lawyers?
Yes, they are.
Then I don't know what they are thinking. Maybe they have some information that I don't. But normally in my office, we would not even, before we start your case, we look at your experience letters and we'll tell you, listen, if you don't have some excuse explaining why you can't get primary evidence, USCIS will in all likelihood not accept secondary evidence. So we would prepare you 3 years ahead or 4 years ahead of time for what is coming.
Okay.
So I'm not sure why they did not or, what they are thinking, but maybe you need to talk with them.
Okay. So that when they asked me for the experience letters for submission, I knew that the company was out of business, but then still I went ahead and sent an email which bounced back because the domain no longer exists, domain.
That is part of your evidence, but talk with your lawyers. This is kind of a difficult conversation for me to carry on. There are so many variations to the central theme. Talk to your lawyers, let them decide what is the best evidence to use.
Okay, then I'll write up an affidavit and...
That's part of what
you
can
about.
Of course, absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
That
was my second part.
Now, I also want
yes.
you to know that this is something we run into all the time. And so far, we've never had any major issues. We've been able to get all our cases approved as long as we can show government why we can't get primary evidence.
Okay, sir. My second question is regarding that internal project we are working on from February onwards.
Right.
I haven't went to my visa stamping a couple of times in India when I was directly working for the end client. I had end client letters and all that. But this is a unique situation where I am placed on an internal project for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure on what documentation I should take for my visa.
See, I think you're trying to do your lawyer's job. I'm not quite sure. This is something you need to worry about. This is our job, not yours. We should tell you what we need. I mean, it's not something you should worry about.
Okay, I'll ask them.
Yeah.
Because
I have seen
so many posts online saying there are so many admin processes going on.
Well,
without
of course.
And
of
all
course.
That.
But as long as it is genuine, I mean, if the project has been moved in-house, that's great. That's very easy to prove then.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody who has posted before? All right, let me get into the H-1 quota system. First of all, remember the government fiscal year begins on October 1st.
On October 1st
and ends on September 30th.
Right.
So fiscal year 2011 begins on October 1st, 2010? Yes.
Right.
Yes, it will begin on October 1st, 2010, I think, and end on October 1st, 2011. I believe that's true. So in other words, the fiscal year does not jive with the calendar year. That's where the confusion comes in. The law is you can apply for an H-1 visa 6 months ahead of time, H-1 classification, okay? So October 1st is the beginning of the fiscal year when the new quota becomes available. April of that year is 6 months before October. So April, May, June, July, August, September, October is the 6 months. So on April 1st, you can apply for an H-1 which will only begin on October 1st. Right now, the quota is fully available. So, basically, we are using the current year's quota to work in the current year because a couple of months ago, on October 1st, the new fiscal year started. If the quota ends, let's say quota ends in December, now we all have to wait till April of 2011 to file for an H-1, which will then begin on October 1st of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it works.
Okay, got it.
And we have to keep it complicated because your lawyers need to eat. Remember that.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. The fact of the matter is immigration law is very complex.
Right.
It is supposed to be one of the three most complex laws in this country.
Right. Okay. All right. Thanks. And then, actually, I have worked in, so my second question is, I have worked in U.S. in the past. On H-1 and almost completed my 6 years, or maybe 5 years or so. And then I left U.S. I have been out of U.S. for a year and a half. However, I have visited U.S. in between on my B-1, B-2 visa.
For how many days did you visit each time?
I think none of those was more than, 5-6 days.
Okay. And what was your total length all counted together?
All counted together might be 14-15 days.
No problem. You've got your 6 years back.
Okay. Okay. Good. And just one last thing. So when I got laid off, that was in December of 2008, I did file an application for conversion to visit visa,
mm-hmm.
and that was refused later on. But the date which was in there, I had already left U.S. before that.
Yeah, you should be fine. There is no problem with that.
Fine.
As long as you made your application before your current status expired,
mm-hmm.
you are okay.
Right. And I did that. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody has any other question they want to talk about?
Mr. Khanna, this is Vinita Bakshi. I have a couple of questions.
Vinita ji, mainu koi Mr. Khanna nahi bulanda ji. Tusi ji mainu sidha sidha Rajiv kya lo te changa rahega.
Theek hai. Jis tarah tanu pata
ji, bilkul. Yeah.
All right. My question is, I'm waiting adjustment of status on EB2 category.
Yes.
And the adjustment of status was filed in July 2007.
Okay.
But I left my employers who had filed for my green card.
Hang on one second. Your I-140 was already approved, right?
Yeah, it was approved before I applied for adjustment of status.
Excellent. So you left your employers after your I-45 had been pending, I-140 already approved?
Yes.
Okay.
And my I-485 had been pending for 2 years and 7 months by the time I left them.
Okay.
In February this year. And then I joined a new company, but unfortunately there was some falling out amongst the partners and the company split.
Okay.
So the part that I was working on, that part spun off. The partners left, and they did give us a formal letter of termination.
Okay.
But it seemed that when they were separating, the CEO had, requested them not to touch my H-1 or do anything against it. So now I don't know if my H-1 is still valid, which was valid till January 2013, or is it term? Did they cancel it? How should I treat that H-1B from those employers?
Well, if you are no longer with that employer, then obviously that H-1 is out of the picture. It no longer is valid.
Okay. Going to the second question, I am not sure if they had ever filed for my AC-21 when they did the H-1B and wanted to take over the green card processing.
You can do AC-21 anytime, and you can do more than one AC-21 for successive companies. So if you join company one today, do one AC21, 15 months later you join company two, 3 months later you join company three, each time you can do a new AC21.
It doesn't matter. It will not jeopardize my green card processing.
I don't see why it should. As long as the jobs are similar to the job that you were supposed to be doing under a green card application, you should be fine.
Okay. Now, my third and last question is there a difference or between W-2 hourly employee or a salaried employee?
Actually, there isn't, because there is no law that says a permanent employment must be reimbursed only on a lump sum salary basis. It can be done on an hourly basis as long as the job is for 40 hours each week. It is still considered to be a full-time full-time job. Actually, full-time starts at 35, if I remember correctly. 5 hours each week is full-time.
Okay, because I've never worked on hourly basis, and now the job that I am getting, and I'm supposed to start on January 3rd, is, these employers are insisting that they would do hourly, W-2 with hourly rates.
Well, as long as it's for full-time, I don't see any problem with it.
Okay.
We do have cases in our own office. We have cases, especially many of the, if I remember correctly, university cases, we are doing on hourly basis, even though they are permanent full-time positions.
Okay, and the new employers can file for my AC21.
They can.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Yes.
Good luck. Folks, anybody else has any questions for me?
Yeah, this is Jahanzeb. We have been communicating through email for the past 2-3 days. So, you probably remember my case.
No, don't assume that. Remember, I talk with so many people every day and I'm old. I forget it. So, remind me, what is it that we are talking about?
The case was I have a BCom 2 years from Pakistan, and then I have a CA.
Oh, yes, of course. Right. I just sent you an email also.
Right. I just saw that email.
I remember. See, you know, there is actually a series of cases from Administrative Appeals Office that say CA is not considered to be a degree, it's a training.
Okay.
If you want, I can send you those cases also. If you want.
But I'm wondering, because I know these couple of people who have with the
exact. No, that's a matter of luck. You know, if the government doesn't catch on and they don't figure out, because it's a very complicated determination. In many ways, it's very unfair that, a CA is considered to be a big deal, a BCom is nothing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in this is the way the government approaches these things. Sometimes they can be so hyper-technical, it's really bothersome and it hurts people. So, if somebody slips through without the government realizing it, great. Remember one thing. I get paid whether you win or you lose.
Right.
I don't have to be a Harvard MBA or Wharton MBA to know where my interest is. I should be telling you, wow, what a great case, let's file it.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
The reason I'm saying it is either I'm honest or I'm stupid. I'm pretty sure I'm not stupid.
No, that's why I wrote in my email, I sent that back, you had this honest answer, because you could have said that, let's go with it.
Yeah.
Like that evaluation expert said, that, we have 100% success and all that.
No, I know all these people. I've used Sheila's evaluations before, and I've never won a case on it. Not a single case.
Right.
And it's not
right.
Because she's a bad evaluator. She does very good evaluations, but that doesn't mean anything. Government has to buy them.
Right.
We can try to sell them anything we want, but the government has to buy them.
Right. And what about the exceptional abilities? Because it says advanced degree or exceptional ability.
That's a very tricky area. Exceptional ability could work if you have over 10 years of experience. You have 7. Okay.
No, I do.
You have over 10 years of experience. You have a license to practice. And there's a bunch of criteria there. I don't remember exactly what they are. You have a CPA license, right?
I have a CPA license in California. I have
You can certainly look into that. The exceptional ability also qualifies under EB2. I don't have the law off the top of my head, but it's something that we can look into for you. And that also is a possibility.
Okay. All right. And right now, when I talk to those people, because they're about to offer, and it's just that between EB2 and EB3, I'm stuck. What they said was, what we can do is we can file you under EB2, and if there is a rejection, or RFE, if there's a rejection, we can appeal and fight the appeal.
No, that's not the way to do it. See, the way we do it is, we prepare the case in such a way as far as humanly possible. Even if EB2 is denied, EB3 is granted. You can include language like that in your case, which at least gives you a safety net that you would fall into EB3 if you get bounced off of EB2. It does not always work, but a good 90-95% of the times it should work.
Oh, okay. Because they were saying then we'll file an EB3 parallelly.
No. I think you can draft your petition in such a way that it covers both exigencies.
Okay. I got it. Okay. So I don't know, like, it just seems a big risk for me because right now I'm a permanent resident in Canada. I wanted EB2 so that within my...
I completely understand your situation. By the way, the L1A option that you were thinking is not that simple also. I have... I will be publishing an article on current issues in H1 and L1 visas either this month or the following month with one of the American Bar Association publications. If it comes up, we'll put it on our website, review it, and one of the areas I mentioned is what are the problems with L1As these days. And you will see that one of the issues is that, you know, how many people are you supervising? Are they professional?
Uh-huh.
So it's not that simple. L1As are not that easy anymore.
Okay, got it. All right. And to show how many people you're supervising, you have to show their payroll and stuff like that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, all right.
It's all a matter of evidence now.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Good luck to you. Folks, anybody else has anything for me today? Very good. Good talking with all of you, and thank you for being here.
All right.